This is the National Conversation from All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin. As some parts of the U.S. begin to relax stay-at-home orders and people begin to go back to their old routines, there are a lot of questions about how to do this safely. And a lot of people are really interested in whether a terrible past experience with this offers guidance. We're talking about the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. A lot of people had questions about it, so we brought in someone who's done extensive research to answer as many of those questions as we can. John Barry is the author of The Great Influenza. It's a history of the 1918 flu, and he is with us now. Mr. Barry, welcome. It's a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
We have so many questions. Well, we have so many questions. We're so delighted you can be here, so we're just going to go right there. Let's start with a question from Lorraine in San Jose, California.
COVID-19 has been compared to the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918, wherein millions of people lost their lives worldwide. If we reopen the economy before medical data shows that it is safe, what probability do we have of having a similar outcome?
First, Mr. Barry, could I just ask you to sort of frame this for us? I mean, how does the what we're going through now compare to what happened in 1918?
Well, there are a lot of similarities, but fortunately, this virus is nowhere near as lethal. 1918 deaths were 50 to 100 million people. Adjusted for population, that would be over 200 to over 400 million people today. The world was a lot less populated back then. This doesn't promise anything like that, even in a worst case, but it does threaten millions of deaths if left to its own devices. And this is more contagious than influenza. One of the biggest problems, other than the fact that it's more contagious, is the length of time everything takes. Influenza incubation period is on average 2 days. This is COVID-19 is on average close to 6 days, roughly triple. The length of time you have the disease is longer, you shed virus longer, so it slows the entire process down. In 1918, flu would go through a particular community in 6 to 10 weeks. This would take a lot longer if left alone. And with social distancing, which is, in my view, absolutely necessary to save lives, that slows the process down further. Now, to the question, again, this doesn't threaten the kind of death toll that 1918 did. Nonetheless, if no social distancing were in place, I think the virus has demonstrated that the models that predicted as many as 2 million deaths in the United States were not necessarily that far off. Fortunately, there are measures in place. There are places that are a little scary in the way we're coming out of it. I think maybe a good model would be San Antonio, which was one of the slowest cities in the country to institute any kind of closing orders in 1918. It was also just about the earliest to come out. And in San Antonio, 53% of the entire population got sick.
Oh my goodness.
And that was with a disease less contagious than COVID-19.
We have another question I think that will be of interest. It's a question from a listener about places that are already reopening. Let's listen.
I'm Sue Walling from Eugene, Oregon. And my question is, how and when will we know whether the efforts of states like Georgia and Tennessee to open up their economies early are safe and successful, or whether they'll just result in more disease?
Yeah, and Mr. Barry, the pandemic does offer some clues about how different state approaches resulted in different outcomes, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. There were some places that closed early, stayed closed for a long time, like St. Louis. There were others, such as San Antonio I just mentioned, that had very different outcomes. St. Louis definitely flattened the curve, eased strain on healthcare, which could only give supportive care, but that was still something. And they had much better outcomes. In terms of timing, it would be at least 2 weeks before you really got serious inklings of how that's going to play out, and probably a little bit longer than 2 weeks before you got a real feel. And of course, since I would guess more openings are planned in the state, then you would also have at least roughly the 2-week delay before you really figured out what is happening there.
Hmm. Let's listen to this message from Mark in North Central Florida.
What do you think we have gotten right so far in our mitigation efforts, you know, physical distancing, masks, et cetera? And what should we plan to do differently 6 months from now when the coronavirus reemerges to save lives and people's livelihood, the economy?
Yeah, that's right. I just want to mention that some people are, a number of listeners have written about expecting a surge of cases in the fall, which Mark mentions. And that is what happened in the fall of 1918. Isn't that right? After the first wave
that
happened
that
in the spring?
But that's
so what can
more,
we learn from that?
Mm-hmm. You know, 1918 mm-hmm. is much more complicated. The first sure. wave was not widespread, very much hit or miss, and it was much milder. The virus changed, got more adapted to humans, spread around the world. In the second wave. I've actually got an op-ed in tomorrow's New York Times addressing this very question about waves. I think the most important thing is that, well, first, to answer the gentleman's question, mm-hmm. What we've gotten right, I've been pleasantly surprised with the amount of compliance with social distancing. There are still plenty of people who are not doing it, but clearly most people are. And that's why in virtually every state, including the ones that are reopening, with the possible exception of Georgia, there has been progress, and in some places, a lot of progress. So that's what we've gotten right. Social distancing is going to have to continue indefinitely, certainly until we have a vaccine or extremely effective drugs. That doesn't mean that you can't do anything, but it does mean just what it says, recommended good distance, you know, masks are probably helpful, although in reality that's, you know, not that as clearly established as I wish it were. Mm-hmm. And I've forgotten what the rest of the question was.
Well, we have only a minute left, so I'm going to throw one more in from Steve Ramsey in Virginia, who asked something that a lot of people want to know, which is what ended the 1918 Spanish flu? He says, I haven't found a clear answer. And how did it
two
end?
Two things happened. Two things. Number one, I think people's immune systems got used to the virus and were much better able to confront and handle it the second, third, fourth time it came around. Number two, the influenza virus mutates very rapidly, one of the fastest mutating viruses in existence, much faster than COVID-19. Mm. And I believe the virus itself mutated in the direction of most influenza viruses. And in fact, it continued to circulate until 1957, when another pandemic, much milder, replaced with another virus.
Well, that's John Barry. He's the author of The Great Influenza. Mr. Barry, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I'm sorry about why, but it's a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This is The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.